Well, I didn't know that Cecile was going to use this example of a bowl this morning, and it reminded me of a Zen saying many of you may have already heard, that the usefulness of the bowl is its emptiness. Adrienne, can you help pass out some of those slips of paper that we have for people to write on today? Adrienne and some other volunteers, thanks, Marcia and Lynn, are going to pass out some slips of paper, and I'll instruct you about the use of those in just a minute. But think about this concept of emptiness for a moment. Daisetsu Suzuki, who was an academic scholar of Zen and who was the person from whom Thomas Merton learned about Zen, if any of you have read some of the reflections that Thomas Merton had on his own spiritual path, Daisetsu Suzuki said, "Emptiness, which is too easily mistaken for simple nothingness, is actually a reservoir of infinite possibility." Again, that image of the bowl, a reservoir of infinite possibility. And this is, of course, the wisdom of Zen, but it's also the wisdom of all forms of apophatic spirituality, whether they be Hindu, Buddhist, Sufi, Christian. These are all spiritualities of the dark night, spiritualities of unknowing, spiritualities of letting go. And all apophatic spirituality emphasizes the infinite possibilities that are latent in and the absolute necessity of emptiness, of shaking off, of letting go, of scraping bare, so that nothing is left. And Lynn is a good time for us to remember again some of the disciplines that are part of our tradition around spirituality. It's a time for us to think about spirituality and spiritual growth. And it's a good time for us to remember that there are a couple modalities of spiritual pathways. Two large ones that I want to remind you of today, and some of you already know that, but just bear with us as we go through this for the people who may not have heard it. But there are cataphatic forms of spirituality and there are apophatic forms of spirituality. And I want to talk about those for just a minute today because they're both necessary to some extent. Both paths are paths to enlightenment and renewal. But one of the reasons we in particular should remember that there are these two modalities of spiritual journeying is because we in Western Christianity and in the West as a whole, in our Western culture, we are overwhelmed by only one of those modalities, and that modality is the cataphatic way. And we sometimes forget that there's an apophatic way that is just as necessary as the other. And so when you think about cataphatic spirituality, we're thinking about spirituality that is constructed around positive metaphors or images. These metaphors or images are used to lead us to renewal. So kata, the Greek word kata means down, phemi means to speak. So cataphatic spirituality sort of tries to bring down the sacred into some vessel that we can use in order to help us on our spiritual path. It's a way of encasing spirituality in metaphor and language so as to make the sacred accessible. And of course, we're doing that here. We're participating in a ritual. We're using language in order to make that pathway to the sacred accessible. Christianity is largely cataphatic. It stresses the cataphatic. And most of Western culture is overwhelmingly cataphatic, whether it's religious or not. Think about the phrase self-improvement. Very cataphatic, because there's the idea of the self which we are employing, and we're trying to improve that self somehow. There's an image of something that has no real, the self is an idea we have constructed, right? There's no real existence in the world other than that it's a metaphor that we use to talk about the way we are in the world. In the Christian world, too, we're overwhelmingly cataphatic. We use word language to refer to the sacred, and I just used it, the sacred. The sacred is word language that refers to something that is essentially an experience we have. We say God. We say Abba, Father, Mother, Spirit, Source, the More, the One, whatever. These are all metaphors. whatever the terminology we use, we're trying to positively capture an idea of the sacred and what is essentially an experience of the holy in language. We're encasing it in language. Likewise, we use words like love or justice or sin or brokenness to describe spiritual realities. And we create rituals to convey to future generations the record of our spiritual renewal. And so this language and these metaphors and these rituals are absolutely essential. Every kind of tradition, spiritual path, uses these cataphatic tools. And they help us to converse about and approximate some value or some experience of the holy. That is the cataphatic way, and it's necessary. But it's not the only way. And that's what is important to remember at this time of Lent. In fact, it's not the only way within our own Jewish and Christian traditions. In our traditions, we've long understood that in order to be healthy, the cataphatic spiritual way always has to be balanced with the apophatic spiritual way. Apophatic spirituality, if you think about the Greek there, apo means to refuse or to turn away, speech, phemi, speech. So the apophatic way is the way of refusing to speak about the holy, refusing to encase or to bring down the sacred. It's a refusal of all images and metaphors in pursuit of spiritual renewal. And this is as old as the stories in our Hebrew scriptures. Moses meets with an experience in the wilderness, and God delivers the sacred name, which is composed of only consonants with no vowel pointing, a name which cannot be said, cannot be spoken. And still, in Orthodox Judaism today, they don't say the name. They replace it with the word master, or one who controls, Adonai. Meister Eckhart in the 1100s says, we have to be willing to burn God in the fires of hell to discover what he called the God behind God, the sacred behind our idolatrous conception of othered God, or God that is over against. And so this is rooted right in our Christian tradition. The very first of the Ten Commandments is, do not make any image of God, for there is only one unspeakable it. The apophatics, whether they're Zen or Hindu or Sufi or Christian or anything else, all apophatics insist that what is truly sacred can never be adequately described with language. It must be directly experienced. And it comes to us, just as we have sung this morning, as a blessed stranger. Stranger. Really important word for apophatic spiritual experience. They believe that this refusing to encase whatever it is in symbols and images is the very heart of deepest prayer. That refusal that holds all things open to us, that leaves the bowl empty, is the very heart of true prayer. And so true prayer for the apophatics like St. John of the Cross, or the English mystic who wrote the Cloud of Unknowing, we don't even know this person's name, or Julian of Norwich, Jacob Bain, Meister Eckhart, for them, true prayer is simple openness, radical, undifferentiated attention, without the distraction of mind, without the distraction of concepts. And there's an emphasis on an intentional letting go of concepts and of ideas and of concerns that have been created by our dividing, categorizing, rational, cataphatic minds. We need them. In order to live in the world, we need them. But this is only one way to approach the sacred. Our minds tend to be addicted to forecasting and rehearsing and analyzing and judging, and so little practiced at simply being at attention in the present moment, like a child existing, simply existing in the womb of its mother, the child existing undifferentiated. That for them is the form of deepest prayer, existing without self concept, undifferentiated from the mother, in simplicity and with an in and from the womb of compassion. There's no mistaking the correspondence between the Hebrew word for womb, racham, and compassion, rechem. They are cognates of one another. To experience the love of God is to be in the womb of God, undifferentiated, simple. And we often think of prayer as talking, don't we? Either silently or out loud, talking to God. pictured somehow as other, because that's the dominant form of prayer that many of us have been raised with. And it's a useful form of cataphatic prayer. But we don't have to live our whole lives there in a sort of third grade form of Christianity. Just as there is a physical development of the human being and an intellectual development of the human being, so there is a spiritual development that is available to us. And that's why we have two opportunities here at this church every week to sit in simple silence on Mondays at 4:15 and at Thursdays at 7 o'clock. Just as there are these stages in physical development, there are stages in spiritual development. And in Lent, it's a good time for us to ask ourselves, what if prayer, what if that deeper kind of prayer is simply listening to the it that can in no way be described in words or differentiated from ourselves or anything else? Just listening to it with receptive emptiness. What was Jesus doing in the Garden of Gethsemane, according to this story? Do you imagine him out there talking for hours? Talking to himself? I don't really imagine that. I imagine that he was out there waiting and listening and struggling to let go of his own desires and of his own will, of whatever the baggage was that he had in his mind, of his own ego, so that what was real really could make itself apparent. He says, what do you want of me, God? Not what I want, but what you want. Isn't it often precisely because we hold on to so many things that we can't actually see what is real? We can't actually see the sacred and the good that is always already making itself known to us if we would just quiet our hearts down to be able to listen to it. In this Parker Palmer quote today, what do we see in this confession of Parker Palmer? He's a great spiritual writer who has helped a lot of people because of the very honest explanation of his own struggle in his writings. It's the confession of a person, I think, who experienced a vital spiritual awakening precisely because his grip on so many of the metaphors of the good had been loosened because of tragedy in his life. For Parker Palmer, it took an actual physical collapse, an emotional collapse of the fashion self, for him to begin to understand that his metaphors of good were just that. They were symbols of the good. My faculties collapsed. He said, my intellect was useless. My emotions went dead. My ego was shattered. And aren't all these things good things? Things that we should grasp onto and hold onto as tightly as we can? You know, we pride ourselves on that in this culture, of gaining in this culture, gaining education, gaining reputation, gaining self-reliance, gaining power, gaining respect. And so we grasp onto these things. We see them as indispensable goods without which we could have no value, the right working of our faculties. And we look down upon those whose faculties don't work right sometimes. Our intellect, our cleverness. We work so hard to maintain positive emotions and feelings. We expend an enormous amount of energy and money and time on our egos, making sure that it's healthy and feels good to us. These precious selves we've spent so many years carefully constructing and yearning desperately to feel good about, that fashioned self, is one of our most precious goods, our meticulously crafted mask. And what happens when it falls off? But what if, and this is the question of apophatic spirituality, what if our iron grip that keeps us holding onto these things that are supposed goods is the very thing that keeps us from reality itself and from our own spiritual awakening? Have you been watching the news lately? Think about our politicians. When you think about ego, think about our politicians. Unbelievable. Unbelievable lack of self-awareness in what we see in political discourse today. Having just finished a class on the psychodynamics of shame, you know, one of the things that was emphasized is that grandiose narcissism is a shame maintenance technique, along with attack other. It's a script that's used when the shamed self doesn't know what to do with the pain of inadequacy. The pain of inadequacy is down there grinding itself away, deeply buried in the self. And so we create this grandiose self that attacks others in order to ignore what's really going down deep inside, to face reality as it is. And it's difficult when our culture applauds that kind of lack of self-understanding and that kind of inattention to what reality actually is. It's a reversal of the wisdom of our tradition. The wisdom of our tradition is that the ones who would gain their lives must lose them. You want to gain a real sense of self-respect? Lose your ego. And those who lose their lives will gain them. There's something in being able to shake that off and not needing it that actually makes you respectable to other people. That's the wisdom of our tradition that we have completely ignored in today's discourse. And what if the way of discovering the sacred is just this, to let it go? And that's what Jesus, I think, is doing in the garden with ego. He's letting it go. I don't want to do the things that feel like must be done because I need to protect myself. But what is it that it wants? What is reality? Lao Tzu says, becoming totally empty, quieting the restlessness of the mind. It is only then when we witness everything unfolding. Remember that quote from Suzuki, emptiness is the reservoir of infinite possibility. All sorts of things block our access to the real and to our own higher duty. Our egos, ideology, very strong opinions about things that we can't let loose of, and because we can't let loose of them, we can't see how we're perceived by others or what really is going on in the situation. Guilt over a bad decision that we won't let go of. Feelings of duty sometimes that block our clear understanding of a situation. Interior demons that sometimes have accompanied us since youth, childhood, telling us that we're unworthy or unclean or incapable or unloved. Worry about a future that doesn't even yet exist. It's just a concept in our minds. What are we holding on to that prevents us from being empty? Maybe quite a lot. And so we think about that today as we pause to think about the gifts of the dark wood and the gifts of emptiness. So I'm going to encourage you to think about that. In my own life, I've had to deal with that many, many times, and I know that many of you have experiences similar to my own. But I remember leaving Japan. I spent many years trying to learn Japanese, and leaving Japan was hard for me. Leaving Japan was difficult because I had invested so much energy there, a sense of duty. But I wasn't seeing the whole thing clearly. It was only in letting go of some things that I could make the decision that was the best decision for me, for the people I was with. What is it that keeps you from the emptiness necessary to hear the sacred call forward for you? What is blocking your way forward? I'm going to ask the choir at this time to come and to prepare to sing. And while they're singing this morning, I invite you to be in stillness for just a moment and think on this question. What is something keeping you from experiencing holy emptiness? That emptiness necessary for you to witness things unfolding. What are you holding on to that might inhibit your ability to hear a sacred call? What is it that's keeping you from perfect peace? Whatever comes to mind, I invite you to write that down on the slip of paper that you were given. And you'll see up here that there's a little place for burning away. We are not going to have a campfire in here. I'm sorry, some of you might have been anticipating that. We're going to burn this outside afterwards. But this is a place for burning away. Let's think about it as the other place. Because we can do this in our minds as well. We don't have to do it physically with an object. But today we're going to do it physically with an object. It's going to be our other place. And the wisdom of our spiritual tradition is this. We remember this particularly in Lent too. That we need to give up the hindrances to our emptiness. We need to let them go. We need to offer them to some other place. to some place where they can simply cease to be. For they are, in fact, no thing, nothing but hindrances to us. So I encourage you to think of giving away whatever it is on your slip of paper today. You might want to just hold it for a minute and then make the decision that you're going to let it go, to give it away completely. And I encourage you, as you hold it in your hands, maybe to grasp onto it and just say to yourself, I give this up. I let this go. I give this away. And that may not be easy. In fact, becoming empty is not easy. It's usually not something we can do in a few minutes or even in one day or in a few days. Giving away the things that are keeping us too full can sometimes be a battle, as if we only rid ourselves of these things by sweating, as it were, great drops of blood. And so let's be real. You know, the signs we are making today of giving these things away may be a sign of willingness to engage in some recurring disciplines, some daily disciplines or practices of self-emptying or of prayer or of radical openness that may engage us for days or months to come. But even so, we give these things away today in confession that our will is that we be rid of these things that are burdens to us, and that it's a good and necessary thing for us to do. We are filled up with too many things, and sometimes we simply have no space for hearing God's voice. So we invite you, however hesitantly or imperfectly, to consign something to this other place today. Whatever you write down, you may want to fold it into a little bit, and I'm going to invite you all to come forward and wedge it into that little burn pile somewhere. After the choir sings, they'll be seated. Jackie will continue playing, and it's at that time that I'm going to invite anyone who would like to come forward and to put their slip in the fire to do so. And if you have brought a financial offering today, you can leave that right up here as well. We'll do the two birds with one stone idea. Don't switch the baskets. Just saying. Okay. This is a time for offering and for giving up, for leaving behind, a time for good giving. So thanks be to God.